Okay, looks like I'm live. Hello, everybody. Welcome to TechLore. This is our weekly Privacy Wins. This is where I talk and give you all some of the recent wins in here. Let me actually move you all to the correct tab here to preview this. It takes place on our forum essentially every week. We have our awesome community members come in and just share things that they've been up to. Sometimes there's wins, sometimes there's losses, but it's safe place for you all to kind of share what your journeys are looking like and your relationship with your tech. So of course, if you're in the live chat, say hello. So hello. Guinness in my veins. Sounds like maybe you're tuning in from a brewery or something like this. Ken Ramos says hello. Farrell says hello, and Jaden S says hello. Definitely some familiar names here, so thank you all for tuning in. If you are in the live stream, just go ahead and say hi. Let me know if I sound and look good. And of course, use this as an opportunity to share anything about your journey or anything that you're curious about. This is where you guys can share what you're doing, help others along the journey, and this is what the space is designed for. And I know you all get very active in the comments after the streams happen as well. So if you're tuning in later, there's no like timeline on this. You can also join the forum, which is a bit probably the best way to kind of facilitate these kind of discussions. So welcome in. And of course, as the title and the thumbnail, oh, and sorry, before I get into that, make sure to share this around. If you are on socials or you're in any communities where this might be interesting, feel free to just ping some buddies and go, hey, this guy I like who talks about things. Oh. Okay, I think I'm back. Hello? Test, test, test. That's not good. Okay, give me one second. There we go. Sorry about that, guys. I knocked my mic off, which apparently caused my whole thing to freak out. So, sorry about that. Let me fix the layout here. Apparently, the layout's all whacked up now. There we go. Okay, there we go. Okay, let's go ahead. So I'm seeing here we have Alpha Male. We got Easy, Jeremy, Alpha Male again, new to the stream. Welcome in. There must be someone with a similar username because I actually thought that I have seen your name before. So. You're back. Yes, I'm glad it's working again. There's like it's really stressful because if you stop the stream, YouTube is like your stream will end very soon if you don't rejoin. So, but it looks like we got back on time. So as the title and thumbnail says, this is the highlight win that I wanted to share this week is about email habits, and this is I think a big pain point for a lot of people out there, right? Because email is just seen as this obnoxious technology that's really hard to manage and is very annoying. But, as of like 5 years ago, there are so many new technologies and new tools that we have available to us that aren't even necessarily privacy-only tools. Like, these are tools that make email actually a manageable thing nowadays that I think we can really lean into for the people around us. Nobody likes email, and so when we push these solutions to people, it can actually be really effective. And so I wanted to share what some of those were and how they worked for Bleached Feather. So I finally took the time to audit my accounts and poor email hygiene. What they mean by audit their accounts is they pretty much have a way to centralize their accounts, go through all the accounts they have, and kind of check in on what's going on. So they made an AddyIO account with it. If you don't know what AddyIO is, it's an email aliasing service. So what this does is you go ahead and register. So like, let's say you use Gmail, ProtonMail, it doesn't matter, Tuta. You link it to AddyIO. And then what you do is AddyIO is going to generate, tens, hundreds of, I see check my sound. Is my sound okay? It should be good. I don't see anything wrong on my end. So why don't you guys let me know if my sound isn't working properly. But Pretty much with Addie.io, it's going to forward everything to your regular email inbox, but it's going to have a unique email for every website. So now you kind of get the benefits of generating a new email on every website without any of the drawbacks. So the more popular service, I think, in our community is Simple Login, and this is what I use. It's integrated with Proton Pass, and nowadays Proton Pass is almost its own aliasing service. But this allows you to manage everything really well. And yes, this has privacy benefits, of course, but this is also how you prevent spam nowadays. This is how you know if a service sold your email to someone else. This is how you can just turn off an email alias if someone doesn't respect your unsubscription. When you try to click unsubscribe and they don't freaking unsubscribe you from the newsletter and they keep emailing you, and you have no option except to now you can disable it. So there's huge benefits there. Now, on top of this, they went through all their accounts in their password manager and swapped them to all email aliases with a few on their Tuda account. They also made sure to enable 2FA, two-factor authentication, on a bunch of accounts lacking it. To those looking to do something similar, it took a few hours, and I still need to keep my old Gmail around to get some account support emails. So definitely give some confetti, some hearts for this, because I actually think Bleached Feather might not have very many accounts. The reason I say this is that this kind of stuff can take literally days or weeks or months. When I really started getting into this in my journey, I had a ton of accounts, let's say just around 200 accounts. I'm just making up a number. But it was like 200 accounts, and then I realized, I had to migrate all these accounts to my password manager. Once they were in my password manager, I had to generate new, unique, strong passwords using my password manager. Then this was before there was email aliasing, but once email aliasing came out, then I had to go through each service and create a new email with the email aliasing service. And now I had to import those into my password manager. Then you have to add 2FA to those accounts. So this like takes a long time. Now you might be going, that sounds like a lot of work. And it is upfront. But once you have everything in your life in one place and it's really nice and organized, it's actually very easy to maintain that organization. And the benefits that come along with this is your accounts are going to be more secure. If anything happens in your life that's like, oh my gosh, what happened? You're going to know exactly what happened. You're going to see the email that was affected because it's tied to each service. You're going to be able to tell, oh my gosh, this service probably got in a data breach. I've gotten weird, sketchy emails in my spam that was tied to a specific email alias that tipped me off to there likely being a data breach before I was ever even notified of a data breach, which allowed me to just even change my passwords right then and there. So there's a lot of these cool benefits that you get, and you're able to audit your accounts and actually go through and say, hey, maybe I don't need like these 20, 30 accounts. So it's good for digital minimalism. It's good to keep yourself a little bit more sane. It's good for understanding your digital life and how you can improve it over time and where your accounts are. And it prevents really basic things like, oh, what's the password to this account? So this is a like multi, there's multiple reasons why this is good to do. And I really wanted to highlight this because I think this is huge. And the only thing I'll add is that this can take time, and I would look at it as maybe a longer term project, but something that you kind of chip away at over the course of a few days to maybe a week or two. For me, it took a few weeks, and that's okay. It's a bit of a journey, but once it's done, it's done. And I pretty much still have the same system I set up 5 years ago to this day. So yeah, just wanted to share this along. Congrats to Bleached Feather for doing this. I know it's a lot of work. And yeah, do you guys have any similar things that you've done? Definitely let me know in the live chat. If you guys have a favorite password manager you're using, I would also like to see that as well. So definitely share what you guys are using. With that said, let's see here. It sounds like I sound good, which is good. If there's anything I need to change, let me know. Hello, everyone. Welcome, Mr. Plasma. Let's see. We got Ken who said it sounds good. Gas key. Switch to Arc. Configured Lux, full disk encryption, AppArmor, FirewallD, and ClamAV myself. Congrats. It sounds like, are you new to the more like technical Linux space? What were you using before Arch? I think I said Arc before. I meant to say Arch. All right, did you move over from a different Linux distro, or are you like on Windows or Mac OS or something like this? I really need to finish switching all my accounts over to Proton. Yeah, see, like that's kind of what auditing does. If you start auditing your accounts, you'll realize, oh shoot, I never transitioned like these six things to use this now, and this is still having an old, address on my account. This has an old phone number, et cetera. So, oh, why'd you switch from Fedora to Arch? I know I can guess the reasons, but I'd like to know your reasons. And then Celeron said, "Hello, Techler. Welcome in, Celeron." All right, we got a few more people. Hello, everybody. If you're new, say hi, and definitely leave any big wins that you've had this last week. I just covered the highlights, so you can always rewind a little bit. But we're going to go ahead and continue at the top, which is from Invisi 101. Again, this is from our forum. You can join these each week. The next one is already live on the homepage, and you can check that out in the description. Invisi 101 says, I have one. I was looking into hosting my own searching instance. I made, or I should say, ChatGPT mostly made, an easy way to install your own instance on Linux or Mac. Posted it on GitHub, Invisi 101. Maybe someone else might find it useful. Really enjoy your YouTube videos, by the way. Did you link any of these accounts? Your public profile's hidden. Okay. For those who don't know, I will go ahead and show you. Oh, why is Google the default search in the private tab? We're going to just be okay with this time around, but this is a temporary browser that I'm using, and apparently it defaults to Google. It's Zen. But like the default search engine is not Google when I'm not in the private tab. That's weird. Anyway, searching is a private search engine that you can self-host on your own. The cool thing about this is I feel like the main privacy issue with most search engines is that you have to kind of hand over trust to the third party, and a lot of them are trusted overall. Like, I really like DuckDuckGo, I like Brave Search, I like Startpage. But this kind of eliminates the need to trust third party if you really want to do things yourself. But it is a bit more technical. With that said, there are public instances. So you can kind of just, and I wish they just listed those very quickly, public instances here. If you go to the searching website, you'll see there's public instances. If we just go to the top one here, this is the search engine, and you can do like TechWarm. And then, apparently it's mostly Reddit oriented, and Reddit always has a very interesting opinions on things. There we go. And that is where their win. They were able to set it up on their own, essentially. And then, let's see, little discussions about that. Tokra. Said, first time post here, just joined the forum a few minutes ago. After watching a few videos, maybe more than a few, old IT guy, ad lib sound cards and tuber. Okay, so we got some context here. My main setup, computer, games and editing videos, pictures, etc. Media and laptop are Windows 10. Can't update the Windows, so this is another person that Windows has abandoned. I've seen so many comments at this point of people who are like, I'm switching over to Linux because I don't have a way to get away from Windows 10 without paying them. So it's actually been low-key kind of a good thing for the Linux community, I think, because I've seen a lot of people migrate to Linux because of what Microsoft has done with Windows 10. They just installed Ubuntu on their main computer, separate disk from Windows, and they're going to also install Mint on their Linux laptop. So that's huge. They didn't get rid of Windows 11, maybe Windows 10, just separate partition and booting into Linux as default, which is also just a big step forward. You don't need to fully cut out Windows to still like migrate to a better alternative most of the time, or some of the time. And this is a good entryway to use Linux. So don't think that just because you can't fully move over to Linux in a day, that you can't still try it out in really creative ways. They got one game they play in Wine and running on Ubuntu. Brave is their browser, and they're looking in the Proton ecosystem. So it sounds like you're pretty new to a lot of this, which is awesome. And it sounds like you're making a lot of radical moves. But need some time to decide what's best for me. So no need to rush either. And I would agree with that. No problems with Linux, except I can't get used to no desktop shortcuts or icons and procedure how to create one and run a program like that. So I would say this is kind of half-win. Definitely feel free to open a forum thread if you have any issues with anything. I'm sure people can help you out. Second part of my story is they got graphene on a Pixel and still have their Samsung because this is even worse than Linux. Watching too many videos, reading too much, and then experimenting, but it's all fun and games. I think this is a step in the right direction, getting rid of Google, Microsoft, maybe Facebook, and probably WhatsApp. Got Signal installed and one managed to get one of my friends to install it. So many small steps. And yeah, really good stuff. And it sounds like you're kind of like early on in the journey, so I'm really proud of you for kind of getting involved, finding your way in, and really no complaints. You're probably going to learn a lot of things that you like and don't like very quickly, so I would love to hear updates, maybe next week's wins, of things that are and aren't working for you. Make sure to keep updating the threads, because you guys share really interesting stories, and getting the updates for those would be really fun as well. And then let me check in on the live chat here. Okay, so Gasky mentioned earlier they switched to Arch from Fedora, and they said they're not entirely sure. They just wanted more room to endlessly fiddle with stuff. Maybe you just wanted a reason to get to say I switched to Arch, by the way, in a live stream. Maybe that's your whole reason, and that's okay too. Yeah, I got shiny new stuff, and yeah, that's fair too. Configured Secure Boot, which was somehow easier than it was for Fedora. Wow. Fedora has SE Linux built in, arguably the best option. Has Lux encryption, also one of the best ways to have better email and account hygiene is to set up a password manager like ProtonPass. I agree. A password manager, we're going back to the hygiene thing, it's much easier to like manage. Thanks, M. M said, wishing you a nice stream. Yeah, thank you. In the Signal group, but Sir Wolf pretty much said what like. When you use a password manager, I would argue like 30% of the benefit of a password manager is the fact that you actually centralize everything into one place, and it gives you the ability to organize your digital life. I was referring to this a little bit earlier. You can theoretically do this with a spreadsheet. You can theoretically do this via other systems in place, but I think a password manager is such an easy way to centralize a lot of this in an overall very safe way that for most people definitely greatly improves their security. So, yeah. It could be ProtonPass, it could be KeePass, could be whatever password manager, as long as it's trusted, of course. Do you think Windows would ever disallow running unsigned applications similar to what Android is trying to do? I think anything's in the air with the way the world's been going. I do think, though, that that would be a huge overstep. And the reason I say this is that Android is, I would argue, a bit of. The mobile ecosystem is as follows: iOS and Android. And of those two options, iOS is locked down and everything must come from the App Store. Technically, that's changed a little bit in the EU recently, but we're just going to ignore that because that's a bit of an exception at the moment. And not many people get apps outside of the App Store, even in the EU. And then you have Android that's had an open ecosystem. When we look at the desktop scene, it's a lot different because every operating system, Windows, Mac OS, and Linux, is an open ecosystem. Yes, Mac OS has the weird like notarization thing, but that doesn't actually affect the apps you can get. Like you can still install anything you want on Mac OS. There's no kind of lockdown. Yes, there are benefits actually to like from a security perspective if you get it from the App Store on Mac OS, but ultimately you can still get software from everywhere and you still own the software you can install on a computer on a MacBook. So it would be a much bigger announcement and a much bigger issue if Windows came forward and said, we're actually going to disallow running unsigned apps on a desktop operating system, because that would be the first time that's happened, potentially ever. And so I think that would be met with a lot of resistance, and that would not be good. And ultimately, the reality is that Linux being there as an option, even if no one uses Linux, it still presents a competitive reason why Windows and Mac OS need to kind of like not push too heavily in an anti-consumerism direction. Because otherwise, like we see with Windows 10, people move to Linux. And that option doesn't exist, unfortunately, on mobile, which means that, like, yes, I know there's some Linux operating systems, but they're not as developed as iOS and Android, and they're not realistically an option for really anybody. And they're much less prominent than desktop Linux, which means iOS and Android is like, well, they're kind of compete against each other, and they set their own rules, and they set what's the norm for the wide, majority of the population. So, yeah, just general thoughts I have about that. So I think it's very, 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 very unlikely. And if Windows does do that, we probably have a lot of other issues going on as well. You did miss that opportunity to say, I use Arch, by the way. I'll do this one as well, and then we'll continue with the wins. Ticeju says, I've been using KeePass on PC exclusively for a few years now. I know I could import my database to say KeePass to Android, but could I be adding a possible attack vector, or is it secure? Do you mind? I'm going to ask you a question. Are you concerned about using a third, like a different client in the first place? Like, are you concerned about KeePass to Android not being safe? Or are you asking about the process of like migrating the database and if that process is safe? Just to make sure I'm responding to the right thing. And then let's go ahead and move over to Sky. And Sky's actually a brand new Techlorean, so I want to thank Sky for joining our community and supporting Techlore. And being in the Signal group and being active, and just welcome to the community, and thank you, Scott. And Sky said, they started their privacy journey recently, but I figured I'd share my early wins. I've begun migrating from Microsoft 365 to Proton. I have finished migrating my emails. I have migrated all of my files from OneDrive. Currently in the process of moving my passwords from Apple Passwords to Proton Pass, and emails for various accounts to aliases, as well as enabling 2FA on every one of them using Proton Authenticator. This is taking a very, very long time. Again, like I said earlier with the hygiene thing, this stuff can take a long time. So I think, I don't say this as a diss to Bleached Feather, but I think they're being a bit, like, ambitious with, like, it took a few hours. Like, that's good, and I'm really glad it took them a few hours. It would not take me a few hours, and I don't think it'll take most people a few hours, and I'm saying this just to be realistic and not, like, you know, discourage anyone when they start going through it and they're like, oh my god, this is a big project. So, yeah, their next win was joining the TechLore forums to get more involved, as I really like the vibe. So, thank you. And if you have any feedback or anything to make it better, just let me know. And that goes for any of you out there as well. If you guys have feedback on how to make the vibes better, just share it with me. But congrats on all of this. It sounds like you're also very new. And I think it's good. Like, the more stories I read, the more I'm reading that people just do the one-click Proton migration. And I think it's a huge win, right? Like, no matter, like, you know, we can nitpick so certain things that Proton does, but at the end of the day, if there's a one-click alternative to Google that does most things that Google does for most people, it's pretty cool. So I'm glad that you're able to just quickly import things. Because I remember when I got involved with Proton in, like, 2017, like, way back in the day, it was not that simple. Like, it was quite a transition. It wasn't as developed, and it's pretty cool how far it's come over the years. And I'm impressed to see it happen. At Day says, I reinstalled Graphene and now I discovered you can make RSS feeds from YouTube channels. And yes, if you didn't know this, definitely do this. You can do this with our channel at TechLore. I published that on our website, I believe. Like, if you go to our website and you scroll down and you click the RSS button here, you can see, like, video only feeds, including, like, the YouTube one. You can also do the PeerTube one. We have, like, blog RSS. We have just a primary Mastodon feed. But yeah, RSS is this massive, awesome technology. If you're not using it, we have a RSS guide that's kind of early in production. And we actually were going to do one and be like, oh yeah, we'll just push one out tomorrow. And then I started planning the RSS guide and I realized how massive of a rabbit hole RSS is because it's so cool and extensive. And so what I thought was going to be like a quick 8-minute video where I just screen record how it works actually very quickly became like a 30 to 40 minute potential guide that's very thorough and walks through why it's one of the best technologies I would argue we have. And it gives you full ownership of how you consume content. So yeah, I'm really glad you discovered that. And they also replaced Google Play Books with Pocketbook, which is offline. I believe that's the hardware, like, e-reader Pocketbook, and Google Speech Recognition offline. One comment on Plexus said to turn off network permissions after downloading the languages, and it still works. I'm really glad. If you guys don't know Plexus, that is an open source project that we have. And where is it? So if you go to our, we should probably make that easier to find. Oh yeah, here. Useful resources. If you go to Plexus, this is an open source project. That is apparently loading slowly. There it is. And it allows you to just quickly check what apps work on de-Googled operating systems. So if you do, like, Facebook, not that I recommend Facebook, but you'll see some ratings and you'll see if it works on, like, a de-Googled operating system. And it's a bit confusing in the desktop. Like, on the app, I think it makes a lot more sense. But, like, it's silver, which means that it's somewhat compatible but might have some issues. And then on MicroG, which is, like, a de-Googled compatibility layer, it's gold, which means it works perfectly fine. I don't support Facebook, but a lot of people might not want to switch to a custom ROM if Facebook doesn't work. You can do the same thing with something like WhatsApp. So these are all community, like, it's 113 ratings. And so if you want, like, an open source project to contribute to, if you're on a de-Googled operating system, like Lineage OS or something like this, definitely download Plexus from F-Droid and contribute any ratings for apps, especially if there's nothing there yet for a new app. It's like a really easy way to contribute to the Android ecosystem. So yeah. And in the app, you see comments as well. So people can leave, like, things like, oh, you have to do this to get the app to work, etc. Cicero said, I started running Libre Elec, Cody. I did. Was it like rebranded or something? Yeah, this is something I never got super into. So this is a bit out of my wheelhouse. Of an old computer they had laying around so I could stream movies and such from my Jellyfin server without a proprietary TV dongle. I also started self-hosting my photos. I used Image running on my same NAS running TrueNAS, and I set up two different user profiles in Graphene to separate some apps I don't wholly trust, but need to have like the app for the proprietary router I have. Working on fixing that. Really good stuff. And it sounds like you're definitely diving into the self-hosting world. So congrats to you for pursuing that. And yeah, I'm still using Synology's stuff because it's super easy, and technically it means I'm self-hosting something with like little to no effort. But I am very much looking to get more into maybe running at least Docker on my NAS, so that way I can like just use some more selective tools that I want to use, because the Synology suite isn't perfect. Internet Ghost, and I'll do one more, and then I'll pivot back over to the live chat. Internet Ghost, my privacy win is that I called my state and federal representatives in the US to oppose any version of age verification for installing software like what we're seeing in Texas. If you guys aren't familiar with this, I've been making a lot of content about it. Let me go back. So if you go, and this is on YouTube and PeerTube, but pretty much. Texas is requiring your ID to download weather apps and everything else. They're KYCing the App Store. It's crazy. And there is already an update to this, which is big tech companies are suing Texas for this. But this is also happening in a couple other states, and they've even proposed federal legislation to try to make this a federal thing in the US. And of course, this is independent of the age verification we've seen in the UK and that we've started to see in other countries as well. So I just want to say that this still needs to happen. If any of you are especially in a jurisdiction where they're talking about this, like you need to speak up. And Internet Ghost making this one of their wins, I think, is a great opportunity to share this with everybody else that you can make a big difference by just contacting your reps. I know there's always the people who are going to say, well, it doesn't matter anyway, blah, 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 but that doesn't matter. Like, we need to be optimistic. If you're not optimistic, then you're just accepting that it's going to be bad no matter what. So we need to have some hope and some optimism that you can make an impact. And the reality is that you can make an impact. If every one of us did a little bit, then it would really add up. So thank you, Internet Ghost, for sharing that and also doing it. I have a note on my phone where I copy down the phone numbers of all my reps' offices so that I can easily call all five of them every time I hear about a stupid escalation of the government's invasion of our privacy. In my mind, I'm in this for the long haul and need to regularly apply pressure on my reps to do the right thing. If not, we will continue to see these boneheaded, if not malicious, proposals being signed into law across the US. Legit, we have been late to the game on a lot of these laws, where they have been already signed into law, awaiting only a start date. We need to block these proposals way sooner than we are doing today. And yeah, I agree. On a personal note, you know, like, a really fun thing I've been able to do at Techlore recently is talking a bit more about the advocacy side of things. And it's been really fun, you know, talking more about how, like, hey, this is a big issue happening in the world, and this is what we're going to do to tackle this issue. Here's what we need to do to get involved. Rather than just going, oh, like, you know, how does this compare to this from a security perspective, which is valuable and should still be there. I've just been finding it to be a lot more valuable for myself and for the people who it's connecting with for us to talk about these bigger issues. F-Droid potentially disappearing, Android becoming a more closed ecosystem, age verification laws all around the world, end-to-end encryption trying to be like backdoored all around the world. These are huge issues, and we need these issues to be tackled if we want any of the tools that we use day to day to still exist and flourish the way they have for many years. And so it's been really fun to pivot Techlore a bit into this digital rights space as like an overall ecosystem. And it's been really cool to see it resonate with people. And we've been seeing the stats go up a lot the last few months. So thank you all if you're new. And I'm glad that we're able to reach more people. And it feels really good. So just as like a side note, there are many things that are they work alongside privacy, and privacy is still a part of a discussion, but privacy has to exist within those things. And let me pivot over back to the live chat. Let's see. Tazeju pretty much followed up here and said, migrating the key pass to the database, and now that I have an additional device with all my password, if that would add any risk. So I believe your question is you have KeePass on your desktop or like your laptop, and you want to get it on your Android device. And you want to make sure that you do this securely, and I assume you want to keep things in sync securely. So something you need to understand about KeePass, I hope I'm not explaining something you already know, but it all functions with a database file, right? That database file is encrypted in itself. And that database file you created when you created your KeePass database. It's just a file on your computer. If you try to open that file with a text editor, if you try to open it in a new KeePass client, it literally won't open and give you the data unless you put in your master password. And/or 2FA if you set that up, which I do recommend if you have the ability to. So the transfer process between the two of them, that file is encrypted. It doesn't really matter too much what you do with it. You can even upload it to the cloud, like Google Drive, if you want to. Theoretically, they can't really get any information from it. But if you want to be a bit safer, then you can still avoid that. So that process is fine. KeePass to Android, I don't know if it's still maintained and updated. I haven't like thoroughly been following with them. I know KeePass DX is typically the more recommended KeePass client on Android. But as long as KeePass to Android is still like maintained, is still updated, and it's doing a good job, there's no reason, there's nothing wrong with it. And actually, one could make the argument that running KeePass on a mobile operating system that's a bit more locked down from a security perspective is in some ways even safer than the desktop version. So yeah, you're working with one of the most secure password managers, and as long as your devices are up to date, you're doing a good job. So just find a fun way to sync those. The main ways to do it are A, manual, do not recommend, but it is an option. You can use something like SyncThing, which is going to sync ideally over something like your network at home, or you can just sync it over a cloud provider, right? You can self-host your own thing, or you can use even a generic cloud provider like Dropbox or Google Drive. Again, that database file is encrypted, so it shouldn't matter too much. I hope that answered your question. If I missed your question somehow, just follow up. I'll be here. Let's see. I like Brave Browser a lot for its privacy features, but ethically, what are your thoughts of it blocking ads on YouTube? This is tough. So I actually last week, this is a fun pivot here. Last week I was in Cyprus. There was an event called the Ad Filtering Dev Summit, and it's literally a summit of just like the people who are pretty much leading the industry when it comes to ad blocking and ad filtering and also privacy and blocking trackers and whatnot. So there were some Brave engineers who were there. There was at least one Firefox engineer who was there. There was the AdGuard people there, the Ghostery people there. Funny enough, the Google Chrome people were there as well because they developed the technologies that all these extensions rely on, and so they are also part of the discussion. And yeah, lots of interesting people, some of like really awesome people in the space. And I was a speaker as well, and my whole speech was about like the paradox of recommending ad blockers to my community while full well knowing that it is hurting us financially, right? And pretty much I got stats together because I'm able to see this. It's not something I'd looked at before the speech, but I was able to look at like monetized views versus views. And it's actually like 25%. So that means, and I think the numbers was we had 1 million views on TechLore between June and July of this year. And only 250,000 of those were monetized views, which means a quarter of our views were monetized, which means there's 75% of our views that, yeah, like it's insane. Now, that's okay because I also showed in the chat, like, hey, we've diversified our revenue, and I had charts, and we're gonna publish this in the coming days as well, so you guys will be able to watch it. But I pretty much published like what our revenue looks like and where our revenue comes from and how we've been able to diversify our revenue to be independent as much as we can from things like ad revenue. But yeah, I can't deny that a lot of people don't have that luxury, they don't have that privilege. And it takes a lot of work to be able to do that. And we also just have a really awesome community. Like, you guys support us. You make a lot of that possible. We've had some amazing sponsors over the years that have done a lot to help us out. And we also just have a lot of people who just optionally click our optional affiliate links. And all those things really come together to make a big difference. So we couldn't do that without your guys' support. But that's also kind of the point. Like, I think that ethically, the ad industry is much worse than someone blocking ads. I think that like the ad industry is propping up surveillance capitalism. It's propping up anti-privacy practices. It is invasive and exploitive, And they've only become worse over the years. Ads are only getting more exploitive, they're only getting more privacy invasive, and they're only getting more annoying and obnoxious. So there is no world where, at least right now, I can tell anyone that like you shouldn't be blocking ads. It's literally the right thing to do on the internet. And even the FBI last year came forward and said that everybody should be blocking ads. It's just basic security nowadays to prevent phishing ads. So this is the right thing to do. But yeah, now creators get a little bit hurt. Not just on YouTube, but blogs, websites, people who don't have strong revenue models, it does hurt them. So what I encourage everybody to do, and what you guys have the ability to do, this isn't just for me. I'm just giving this as broad advice. It can be, I see Jose's in the chat. This can do this to Jose, do this to anyone. Like, just do it for your favorite creator. Go to your favorite creators, and if you're blocking ads, either be on YouTube Premium, so that way like they get some revenue from YouTube Premium, or if you don't want to support Google or YouTube, which I can't do either, then find a way to support that creator. You only have to do it for one creator, right? If you can do more, then do more. But the reality is, when you have a million views coming in, if 2% of those people are like favorites, like let's say Tekler is their favorite channel, and if they just gave like a few dollars a month, doesn't seem like much, that's still a lot more than most creators get from their communities. And I know that sounds a bit sad, but that is the reality for most creators. So yeah, Jose said like Patreon, buy me a coffee. So if you just pick a favorite creator and every few months give them a few bucks, you're actually doing most of what you can for this problem. My speech there was geared towards more other people. And in my speech, I'm like, hey, like I would like to work with you guys and figure out different solutions because there's a lot of talk about how do we kind of fix this issue? Because if we just kill all ads overnight, it actually destroys a lot of the free and open internet. And we're probably just going to see all information paywalled overnight. And that's not a good solution either. And so it's a really difficult issue to navigate. And it's something that we need to talk about. And I'm really glad you asked about it, actually. So yeah, Tazeju, what I would say to you is continue blocking ads. And I would say it's very ethical to block ads because you're blocking an unethical industry. And find a way to support the people you care about. It doesn't have to be me. I'm not saying this as even like a way to shill our Patreon and whatnot. Like, I'd love if you guys do join it because it does help us a ton. But I'm saying this because I think it's the important thing to do for the overall ecosystem. And all of you should be supporting at least one person that you guys like. So yeah, that's my long-winded answer on that. So I hope I didn't just bore everyone with something they weren't interested in, but it's something that's on the mind given I just gave a whole talk about it last week. Let's see. Jose, we need to apply that pressure. Yeah, Jose's talking. I think I'm a little bit behind here on the chat, but for politicians and stuff like that. So yeah. Let's see. How are they blocking Proton? Can you not access it via VPN? Even if, is this, what are you referencing, Jose? And yeah, I think that's what they were asking about. Should you use a real info when registering for a domain to use it in your email as custom domain for privacy? So I have mixed feelings on this. When you register for a domain, you are legally required to put in your real information in most situations. Luckily, you can still use Whois, right? Whois protection. And that protects your information from just being publicly available to anyone. And pretty much what would need to happen is if somebody wants to sue you or they think that you're doing something illegal, they're going to contact your domain registrar and then they probably will hand over your information to that person. So it's kind of like a private by default, but could potentially be leaked in the future. If you want to avoid this issue altogether, there are these services that essentially own the domain on your behalf. So these are things like Njalla, NJALLA, and Orange website, I believe, as well. They essentially allow you to register with just Bitcoin and just no personal information required, but they technically own the domain on your behalf. So there's theoretically a bit less ownership there, but it's mostly fine. Like, I doubt these companies are just going to steal your domain and just disappear someday. That would be really bad. But yeah, it is something to think about if you want to avoid that altogether and you're not doing anything that sensitive. And also, welcome in, Jose. If you guys don't know Jose's channel, I just interviewed Jose. I think it's our newest video that just came out. And he does dumb phone reviews, and he has some great insight into digital minimalism that people really enjoyed so far. And I enjoyed it as well. Yeah, and actually, Jose, I'm gonna directly refer to you now. Something I re-listened to your interview because I didn't edit the interview, so I don't fully remember everything we talked about. So I re-listened to it once it went live. After it went live, trusted my editor on that one. I liked the way that you put it. Like, does this thing on my computer give me energy or does it drain me? And I've actually started applying that to different areas of my life recently. Like, does this energize me or does it drain me? And it's a very, nothing's that binary, but it's a good framework for figuring out like where things kind of lean. So just something life advice for you all, if you're kind of like trying to explore if you should continue doing something, it's something to think about. Decent ad block is just basic security these days with how dodgy online ads are. Exactly. Like it really is just basic security and privacy. One of the number one things anyone can do to just get started with privacy and security is literally installing an ad blocker. And so there's no easy way to get around that fact. Yeah, I agree with Jose. That's kind of the best middle ground we have right now. What do you think about Irene email? I never heard of it, so. Yeah. Yeah. All good stuff. If every subscriber of mine gave me $2 per year, I'd make 70K per year. That's the median salary in the USA. Crazy. $1 for every Tekler sub would be 72K. Yeah, it's like I've done the math before, and like I've talked about this with Nate on surveillance support, but if literally 1% of our viewers gave $1 a month, it would be insane. Like that is so much more than what we actually get from patrons, which is fine. I know it's like it's asking a lot from people, like especially on a mass scale like that, but like the numbers do scale up. So the point is if you have a favorite creator, if it's Jose, if it's like Nate from the New Oil, like whoever it is, if you even like tip a dollar every few months, you'd actually be surprised how much that stuff adds up for different creators. So yeah, you remember like creators are working with like numbers in the hundreds, thousands, millions, so that stuff does matter. Your school makes it forbidden to block ads. That's crazy. Someone asked if they should switch to Tutomail since India was blocking Proton. Oh, weird. Yeah, that's a good question. All right, let's go ahead and continue the wins. Janelle, TrueNAS, thumbs up. I have taken my first steps with TrueNAS. In the future, I would like to no longer have any data on macOS and Linux clients, everything remotely in TrueNAS. I really like TrueNAS. I find the system very streamlined and clear. The community is very helpful. I'm glad. And a bit of a side note here. I don't know if this is what Janelle's directly referring to, but it's something I'd like to still speak to. One of the coolest things about moving over to a NAS is that it has given me so much damn freedom in terms of data storage. So this is something that I never really considered or thought about until I got a NAS. Because before I had a NAS, I had all my devices and I had to figure out a way to sync data between them. And normally that takes the form of a cloud provider and you keep all your data in the cloud. But when you become a little bit more privacy respecting and you try to move away from big tech companies, you typically move away from services that make that very simple. And so you end up with this situation where, oh my God, all my data is scattered between all these services and all these devices. Now, enter a NAS. Your NAS now becomes your home base for all your data. And rather than each device kind of having its own data, all your data is stored in one centralized place, and you essentially just connect to it from different devices. What that means is that your data is always static and consistent, and you always have a reliable data source that is the same. And what that means is you can swap out devices. Your iPad can break, your phone can break, you can chuck it in the river, and ideally, you can just get a new one, right? And then just log into your NAS, and now all your data is just right there as if it wasn't, as nothing happened. And so it's made it so much easier because you can set up backups automatically on your devices so that your device backups are done to your NAS. Your actual data is stored on your NAS, and then your NAS can do its own backups that are end-to-end encrypted to the cloud. Make sure you do something like this or some kind of backup method so you don't lose all your data, of course. But this way, it allows you to freely swap devices. You can change an operating system overnight and still have all your stuff ready to go. And it makes your devices more like blank slates to be able to access something else that always has a reliable set of your data. So this is just a way to say, like, I really enjoy my NAS for that. And it's something that's hard to replicate without a NAS or a cloud provider. So I just wanted to share this along if it's something you guys haven't really thought of before. But I know most NAS people maybe have already figured this out. But it was something that was a big surprise to me. Main mobile number deleted slash changed. Downvote. I've been using my old mobile number for about 15 years and have now deleted it. Unfortunately, it was stored in many places where I no longer have access. I am still in contact with various support departments to change the number. It's a very tedious process, but hopefully the next mobile number change will go much better. This one really went wrong, and I'm really sorry to hear this. It's not uncommon, and it's something I hear about a lot, and it's happened with me in the past as well, where I delete something a little bit too early. And what happens is this obnoxious process where it's like, oh, now I have to put in like three times as much effort than if I was just patient and waited. So here's what I recommend. I really want to drill this message home. If you already have a service, like let's say you're in Gmail, let's say you have an old phone number, let's say you have an old Facebook account, phase things out over time. I know it feels good to click delete, but just trust me on this one. You will gain nothing. Nothing. Like, if you move away from the service and you stop using it, there is nothing you gain from deleting it today versus deleting it in 3 months. And the reason I say that, and there's actually a lot more to gain by waiting because it is so rare to actually like go through an account that you've had for 15 years, successfully find every single service dependent on that account, successfully migrate everything to the new service, delete the old one, and not realize you made some kind of mistake. So what I recommend a lot of people do with their old phone number, port it to something like Google Voice, port it to a VoIP service. So that way you still have access to it, but you're not actually using the number anymore. And you're slowly migrating to something else and you're giving it time to make sure everything transitioned properly. Same thing with an old email. Move over to Proton, move over to Tuta, move over to whatever you want to use. Keep the Gmail account open. And maybe set an overall deadline, like, hey, I'll check in on it every two weeks, and then after 6 months, if there's still like I find no reason to keep it around, then I can finally delete it. Just trust me, please do this. It will save you so much headache in the future, and it doesn't actually change really anything about your journey. It just protects you a little bit more. This was the highlight, so if you want to check out kind of the commentary on auditing your accounts, that was at the beginning. And then Wellington said they configured their searching instance to redirect YouTube to NVIDIA, Reddit to Redlib, and Twitter to Knitter. So those are all front ends. So that way, like when you click YouTube, it goes to the open source front end to watch YouTube videos, Reddit to the open source Reddit alternative, etc. So good stuff. It's a really easy thing to make yourself a little bit more private out there and avoiding the big tech services, at least directly. And then there's this guy named Henry. He has a win he wanted to share. It's actually not really a win. It's more of a like beginning of a journey because so some context if you guys don't know. So uBlock Origin is one of the best ad blockers out there. It's extremely thorough. It's very much more than an ad blocker because it's also like a privacy extension. It blocks trackers. It blocks security issues, etc. And Google released a new technology called Manifest V3, which is a new extension technology, and it actually prevents some of the features that uBlock Origin was able to do. I'm simplifying this heavily. And so Manifest V3 is a bit more restrictive, and so uBlock Origin actually had to release something called uBlock Origin Lite, which is designed for Manifest V3 browsers. And so this is why in Google Chrome there is no longer uBlock Origin. Oh my gosh, Johnny's back. Hello, Johnny. Thank you so much, Johnny. Okay, I'm gotta give a heart as always. Make sure to give Johnny a thumbs up, everyone. Thank you, Johnny. You're freaking awesome. Every time you come in and go ahead and give a tip, Johnny always W on Q. thank you, Johnny. Yeah, Johnny's showing how to support creators. That's firsthand creator support. So thank you, Johnny. Now what was I saying? I got distracted. Okay, yeah, so back to what I was saying about uBlock Origin Lite. I have actually installed uBlock Origin Lite on a few people's Google Chrome browsers that they were using because it's one of my go-to things to do for people to just instantly make them a little bit more secure and private. But all three of them started reporting site breakages. And they were actually, even when uBlock Origin was disabled on that specific website. So they literally turned it off on the site, but the site was still broken And then when they uninstalled uBlock Origin Lite, it started working. And then uBlock Origin Lite was also released on Safari for both iOS and macOS. And I actually switched over to it from AdGuard. And I started suffering weird issues as well. There's an account that I had to log into, and I just couldn't log into the account. It said we can't accept the password for whatever reason. And turns out it was all tied to uBlock Origin. I moved back over to AdGuard, and I don't have these issues anymore. So the win here is I've started at least diagnosing the weird problems I've been having on some of my devices. And so I'm also sharing this because if you've been having weird website breakage issues recently, if you are using uBlock Origin Lite, it's something to investigate. I don't know if this is impacting everyone. I don't know if it's just me, but I have multiple data points from myself and people in my life who've been having issues with uBlock Origin Lite. Keep in mind, uBlock Origin Lite's a brand new project for uBlock Origin. And so I can see how maybe there's, you know, things to learn, and it's probably not perfect yet. So if anyone knows anything about that, or you're aware of anything there I don't know about, please let me know. I'm also learning, and I don't know everything. So these are things like I'm experimenting with as well. So, yeah, and thank you again, Johnny. I'm around if you have any questions or anything, because you always just tip without any question to go along with it. So I guess it makes things easy for me, but then I don't really know what to say. A quick water break. If you're listening, we're all going to take a water break. So if you go to our forum, and you go to the top pinned one, you can already see next week's wins. And these are the ones that we'll start covering next week. We only have three so far. So make sure to join. It's free to join. It's an open source forum. It's based on discourse. And you guys can all go ahead and do that. Oh my gosh, Tori, our editor, left a comment? No way. This is crazy. Whoa. Wait, you have a Libra too? I have a Libra too. I didn't know we both had a Libra too. And yeah, I agree. Matt Hardware. Okay, cool. All right, let me pivot over to just our homepage here. And then let me give you all a bit more attention in the live chat. Boom, make you all big, big. Let's see here. So now that I'm done with the wins, you all can just ask me questions. This is kind of just free for all, whatever you want to say, whatever you guys want to talk about. If you want to get my thoughts on things, if you want help with anything, I can give my two cents if it helps you. Or if you guys just want to share your wins, like if you did anything cool in the last week or in the last 2 weeks or whatever, share it so we can all kind of cheer you on. Or if you have questions about something you're stuck between, someone in the community or just myself can help you as well. We got a Bronze Techlorian. Welcome. We got a new member. So thank you, Alcove Electronics Workshop. I will have to look to see if that is a business that is like nearby or something. Cool. Thanks. Cool. Thanks for the support, guys. Let's see. Where should I start from? The privacy rabbit hole. Okay, I'm gonna be FRFR right now. A video, sometimes I publish content and I go, man, this is like just not that good. Like to me, it's like, I feel like we've done better content than this, but I know it's still good enough to publish and people will still get value from it. And then people just eat it up. They're like, wow, this is the best video you made. And I'm like, man, really? Like I didn't feel that way about it. But then people overwhelmingly are like, no, this is a super good video. And I'm like, weird. And then sometimes I put out a video and I'm like, dude, this video is just so good. And it just totally flops. Everyone like, no one likes it. So the video I'm referring to here is the 7 Essential Encrypted Services Privacy Crash Course. And this video has been like just overwhelmingly loved on YouTube. There's been a huge number of comments of people who are like, whoa, you know, this is like such a, you know, this is such a good video. This is my first entryway into privacy, and you just broke it down in like 10 minutes and you kept it so simple, and I know everything I need to know. So apparently this is a good video for that. Even though when I put out this video, I'm like, man, I feel like this is just summarizing things we've talked about forever now, but apparently that is very useful. So yeah, that's where I'd kind of push you to actually. People have been really liking that video, and apparently it's 14 minutes, not 10. But you can find that on YouTube, and people really liked it. Let's see. I'll try to work quickly so I can catch up to you guys here. Let's see. Memes aside, the best first step, you can just change your browser from Chrome Edge to like Brave and Firefox. And even that, if you still have to use Chrome, just installing an ad blocker already makes, like, that's a huge step forward, right? Like, when we really break it down, the big thing that Brave gives you is like really good ad blocking that comes with tracker protection. And yes, no Google telemetry. The Google telemetry is at least a first party issue, but if you install something like uBlock Origin Lite or any like basic ad blocker that also protects you from trackers, you're at least preventing a big part of like the third party privacy issues that you'll find when you use Chrome, and it stops websites from just doing everything in there. So like, yeah, there's so many little steps that people can do that make a substantial difference. I do not think using Graphene OS or Linux actually needs to be a first part of people's journey. Like, yes, those can be a helpful part of the journey, but you can use Graphene OS and still be on Facebook. You can still be granting tons of bad permissions to bad apps. You can still be like texting everyone via SMS. So that's my point here, is that there is so much that you can do without needing to change your whole operating system that actually, in many ways, makes a bigger difference for most people. So these are all good things to do as well. I don't disagree here. But just keep in mind that like literally installing an ad blocker is like, if everyone just installed an ad blocker, that would actually make a much bigger difference than if people switched operating systems, I think. Yeah, all good stuff. You guys saw it jump. Do you ever live stream, Jose? Because if you do, I bet you know what it's like when things jump around. M in the Signal group said, "Gotta love Libra too." And I see you typing there too, so maybe I'll see some more. Hello, David from Melbourne, Australia. Is it Melbourne? Like, is it a hard born or is it just Melbourne? Yeah, I'd be curious on the pronunciation there. But welcome to the stream, and thank you for saying hi. And hello from the US, I suppose. I don't know what that means anymore globally. Is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? I always feel awkward when I'm traveling to Europe and I'm like, where are they? And it's funny, I saw this on Reddit recently. Reddit was like, how come Americans always have to specify the state they're from? And it's like, well, it's twofold. One, because it's a common follow-up question. You say you're from the US, and the next question is, oh, what state? So it's kind of like to get ahead of that. But the other thing is that like I feel like it's less embarrassing right now when I go to Europe and I say I'm from California, and typically that's better received in places like Europe, I find personally. Because yeah, I think a lot of countries don't love Americans, tourists at least. So, but I think that's a generalization. So I don't know how I'm perceived by other people. It's hard to know. It's hard to know how other people perceive you. Is it possible to set up a Mac Mini as a NAS using Tailscale? If so, how's it different from using TwinGate? Do you need to buy a domain in order to use Tailscale? Good question. Yes, you can repurpose any device to be a NAS. Is it the most optimal thing to do? Probably not. Like, having proper NAS software means you're getting a device that's optimized to be used as a NAS, and also a lot of them have multiple hard drive bays, and with a Mac Mini, you're going to be a bit limited on the hardware side of things. But Mac Minis are super efficient, and they might just work as a basic NAS if you just need a basic thing. And yeah, you could totally use it with Tailscale, and I don't think you need to use a domain to have that done. With Tailscale, what it would be like is you would essentially set up the NAS, or like the NAS aspect of it. Like, you would make it a device, and you can connect to the device from any other device as long as you're connected to the same VPN connection via Tailscale. So yeah, that is a really easy way to do it. And then when you use Tailscale, you log in through the IP address. So that's what I do with my NAS. Like, I have Tailscale connected, and then you copy the IP address, and then you just bookmark that in your browser, and then you can just connect to the NAS remotely. So it's definitely something to try out. I think it's a good middle ground if you have spare hardware laying around. Yeah, this is the way too. It's a bit old school, but it is there. I use uBlock Origin Lite, Decentralize, and Privacy Badgers as active extensions in Brave. Not sure if it's overkill, but I feel safe. So actually, this is very interesting. So I think one of the most interesting talks from that event I went to in Cyprus last week, and again, I'll do more coverage on the event that's going to come out in the coming days. So I'll be able to give a more proper analysis that you guys can follow when I do that. But don't do something because it feels safer necessarily. Like, it's better for you guys to be more strategic about what you're doing. And the reality is, uBlock Origin Lite is worse than just Brave's built-in ad blocking, and like what Brave offers you with the Brave Shields. So that's just redundant. Decentralize probably isn't doing much for you either. And Privacy Badger, like, yeah, you can install it, but I also don't think you need that in Brave. And realistically, those extensions are making you more unique online. That was one of the talks that someone gave, was that like people who have these really hardcore extensions actually kind of make themselves more vulnerable in some ways as well. So I personally, if I was you, I would actually uninstall all three extensions and just use Brave. And if you want more customization, Brave actually has filter lists that you can turn on and off. And so you can enable a few more things if you want the Brave Shields to be a bit more restrictive. So that's my advice. But you're not destroying your privacy. Like, you're still far better off than someone just using Chrome with nothing, in my opinion. But just keep in mind that more isn't always better. And yes, hydration is key. How much percent does YouTube take from Super Chats? I think it's 30%, is if my memory serves. I don't know if they've changed that, but he will ask you a demanding favor someday. I think that's in reference to Johnny-O. Yeah, honestly, it is a bit of a concern. And it has happened in the past where it's like someone, you know, if it's like they support us and it's super appreciated, but then like they still have to respect rules in our community. They still have to be like a safe part of our community. And yeah, like typically what happens is like, hey, like you're violating rules. I hope you understand why this is a problem. And if you still have an issue with this, like normally it's like we have to find a way to refund them and make them happy. It's like that's the easiest, cleanest way to handle that situation. But yeah, I hope that most people understand that it's you can't just yeah, I don't think Johnny has this problem. This is a very off-topic issue we've had to deal with in the past, though. Let's see. What are the main categories you recommend to create email addresses for as part of email hygiene? So I talked about this a bit at the beginning. Email hygiene, I would say step one, have a password manager, because you want to be able to easily organize different emails and be able to track what's where. So have a password manager. Two, pick just any email provider. This even works with Gmail. I don't recommend Gmail for everybody, and I don't think it's a good email provider, especially for privacy. But this workflow works with literally email provider, and that's the point I'm trying to make. You can do iCloud Mail, you can do Yahoo, you can do Gmail, you can do Proton, Tuda, Fastmail, whatever. Pick your email provider. So again, password manager, pick an email provider, then pick an aliasing service. This is your three-step process to take control of your email. Then what you do is you start slowly migrating your services to the email aliases, and they all forward to your main email inbox. So it's the same convenience. You still check only one email. Everything goes to the same email. It's still all in one place, but every other person has a different email address. It's super convenient, and you can easily track it and maintain it in your password manager. Now, if you really want to do it the most efficient way possible, and what I did is I just moved to ProtonPass, because now you have all three things in one suite, right? Like with ProtonPass, it has password management, and you can generate new aliases right there, and it's all forwarding to ProtonMail, which is part of the same ecosystem. And you can kind of do this as well with Bitwarden. Bitwarden, I think, has integrations with Adyo as well as Simple Login. And so some password managers have actively baked in ways to even make this more convenient. So just some pro tips for you guys and good ways to get started. If I'm using NextDNS, is it redundant to also use AdGuard? Important question. Are you talking about the AdGuard extension or the AdGuard filtering, which is like the system-wide filtering where they block domains? Happens all the freaking time, Jose says about the stupid jumping. And you know what, Jose? That's been an issue for like 10 years now, I swear. And you'd think that they'd be able to fix that problem. It's crazy. I spend tons of time on video nobody likes than I do off the cuff, and people love it. LOL. Yeah, I know. It's very frustrating sometimes, but it is what it is. One live stream per month to catch up with news. I assume like dumb phone news. I actually haven't tuned into one of your streams yet, Jose. I embarrassingly didn't know that you did monthly streams, so now I want to add one to my calendar. Proton Unlimited or individual services? Good question. So what this person is asking is, I'm gonna TLDR the question. Should I just go all in on Proton and use all their stuff, or should I pick individual services? And M, I see your question on Signal you just sent, and I'll address that in a second here once I catch up on the live chats because I'm almost done here. Regarding Proton, I think what I would recommend, if someone was a friend or family member and they have a very typical, let's just say a very typical relationship with technology. So, they use Apple, they use Google, they use all the normal stuff. I think people are used to ecosystems, they're used to convenience, and they're used to things just working well for them. And I think for those people, the one-click transition that Proton offers, as well as just the instant switch options that Proton creates, is super enticing and makes it so easy to instantly move to a service that gives them so much better privacy. It's all open source. It's compatible across all operating systems except Proton Drive on Linux, and it's just an obvious improvement for anyone out there. And it's again like one click for most people. So I think what I would recommend to a friend or family member who's like, "Hey, I love what you're doing. I want to go on this journey, but I don't really know how to do it." I would say, "You know what? If you want to just do something like today and you want to really start, just move to the Proton ecosystem right now. Put your eggs in that basket, right?" It's okay, because right now all your eggs are in a big tech basket, but you're no worse off just moving your eggs to another tech company, right? But one that's not like big tech and one that values people a bit more and has end-to-end encryption, is privacy respecting, is open source, etc., right? And then be like, okay, and just know that you are entering an ecosystem here, but as you kind of get used to it and familiar with it, start seeing if there's a service in that ecosystem that maybe you don't like. And then you always have the option down the road to move one or two services that you are using Proton for something else. So an example of this, someone's all in on the Google ecosystem. They discover the problems with Google. They want to support a European company. They want to get away from a US tech company. They want to take back their data. They want to be sovereign with their data. Whatever their reason is, they're like, man, but I just don't have time. I have a full-time job. I've got a family. You know what? I'm just going to do the one-click thing for Proton. It's going to move all my emails over. It's now my new email provider. And I'm going to forward all my emails from Gmail to Proton. I'm going to set up password management in Proton. And I'm going to start storing my files in Proton Drive, etc. After 3 months of this, it's great. I've actually benefited a lot these last 3 months. But I'm not really a fan of Proton Calendar. It's not very good. So what's a different alternative to Proton Cal? And then that's how you can kind of piece things together. So my answer to you is, if the Proton ecosystem works for you, there's nothing inherently wrong with it. Just always have maybe alternatives that you explore and see if they're better. I think that it's a very nuanced question. It depends on the person, it depends on their preferences. But ultimately, there's nothing inherently wrong. And I think using the Proton suite is actually addressing most of the issues that people have with big tech services nowadays, even though it's not a perfect suite. And I don't use all of the suite myself. So, yeah, that's my long-winded answer. And I hope that helps clear things up. Ultimately, most of the Proton suite you can access for free. It's a bit, limited, but you can access most of the stuff for free. So you can just try it out, see if you like it, and then, yeah. I feel like you have to go to extremes to make any difference. Data brokers sell to each other, and if one or two of the big ones have most or all your data, then they all do. Yeah, little steps are good, and I think it really depends on the what issue you're trying to address. I think data brokers are a really bad example to point to because that is just a really difficult issue to deal with, but that is just limited in scope to personal information that you publish out there. But installing something like an ad blocker objectively keeps you safer the second you install it. It protects you from a phishing, ad that pretends to be KeePass, so you actually install the correct version of KeePass on your computer. True story. That was a Google search ad that showed up above the KeePass results, and so it installed malware on your computer, and it perfectly replicated the KeePass website, a password manager. So that's a true story. So you instantly keep yourself safe from hackers. You instantly keep yourself safe from the surveillance capitalism world, right? Like there are instant benefits that we can point to the moment you install an ad blocker, but there are independent issues and each have their own difficulties. So yeah, some of them are a bit harder, some are a bit easier, but that's why we say like take small steps because they really do make a difference. I mean, XMR option for Techlore support page. What it was. Yeah, we only support. So we used to support Bitcoin on our. If you go to our support page, we used to support Bitcoin as well, but we only do Monero. And you might be wondering why. It's because, I don't know, I feel like we owe it, and I wish more people were more responsible with this. There's actually a lot of responsibility when you publish a Bitcoin address on your website. What I mean by this is, let's say you're a politician. This is true. A lot of politicians have this nowadays. If you're a politician and you have a Bitcoin address on your website, just a generic static Bitcoin address, you are now jeopardizing literally everybody who gives you money. This means that anyone can go in because it's a public ledger and they can see, oh, this person donated to this politician. And I can see everywhere else about like where that person sent their money, and I can even tie it to maybe a custodial exchange that KYCs them. So it's a really easy way to actually jeopardize everybody who listens to what you do. And this is a serious problem. Like, I think I have some responsibility to my audience to make sure that there isn't just a publicly viewable way to learn everything about our audience. Like, that is something that should be protected, especially because they're privacy-respecting people. So that is why I ultimately removed Bitcoin. A, because almost no one used it, and almost all of our audience was using Monero anyway. But B, because with Monero, I have that, like, extra safeguard in place to make sure that people who support us aren't jeopardizing themselves by exposing themselves to literally anyone in the world who wants to just see who supports us, which I think is a serious privacy violation. So. Let's see. Okay, yeah, Jose. End of the month, 20th to 30th of the month, most of the time. Okay, I am gonna mark that on my calendar and I will do my best to tune into the next one. So thank you for letting me know. They are working on Proton Drive for Linux. That's exciting. That's very exciting. For Black Friday, what are you gonna buy and what do you wish to see for scale? I hope Proton discount. So I don't. I think I can share this. I don't think it's private. We already got access to a Proton discount because we're an affiliate for Proton. I think I don't know who I can reveal, but we do a Black Friday video every year, so you can expect a Black Friday video in the coming weeks. And then that's a really cool opportunity for us to also like share with you guys like what the deals are for each year. Yeah, that's something I can definitely do coverage for. We got our new member here, Alkov, Electronics Workshop. Been with Proton since 2014. Like most services accept Calendar and no fast way to upload to Proton Drive. No fast way meaning I assume you're using Linux and there's no Linux client. Is that what you're implying? Yeah, I think Calendar is also the service that I've been struggling with as well, but it's gotten really good over the years. So I've been pretty happy with it lately, but at first it was a bit rough around the edges. But yeah, pretty cool stuff. All right, I am caught up. So in the Signal group, we have a message from M, and I'm going to read it out. I'm just kind of torn on something. I know it comes down to a personal decision, but would love your thoughts if you feel comfortable talking about it. Well, I already started reading it, and I didn't read the rest of it, so I guess we'll see if I am. WhatsApp is the number one messenger over here in Europe. I deleted my account several years ago for privacy reasons and was so happy with that decision. The last few months have marked the first time I'm kind of struggling with this decision. I have been in social situations where I had to miss out on group chats and contacts because I wasn't on WhatsApp. On one side, I don't want to miss out on chats and connections. On the other side, I don't want to compromise my values or risk people contacting me there instead of on Signal. I also worry about people bringing up sensitive stuff if I were to be on there. Any advice? Oof, okay, that's a tough one. Yeah, I mean, I think you're going to have to ask yourself what's more valuable to you. Is your relationship with technology and your relationship with WhatsApp and Facebook and are like is that more important to you than the connections that you might make with these people? And that's a question you have to ask yourself and think about and reflect on. I can't answer that for you, and I know you said that yourself because you said it comes down to a personal decision. But it's something you just need to think about. And remember, there are middle grounds. You can have a WhatsApp account that you just kind of never check. A good workaround that I found recently, because I have to use things like Telegram for the marketing job I have with Cake. And with Telegram, I set up a Telegram account, and then I just started using Beeper. And Beeper is not open source, but Beeper is at least like a way where I don't have to use the actual Telegram client on my device. And so now Beeper has kind of become my all these crappy services I don't want to use. I just keep them in one client. So that way I don't have to have the WhatsApp app. I don't have to have the Telegram app. I don't have to have the whatever else you have to use that you don't like app, because Beeper has all those things built into it. And WhatsApp, I believe, is supported in Beeper as well. So you can literally set up Facebook Messenger, WhatsApp, etc., all in Beeper. And that way, it's like an easy way to kind of compartmentalize these bad services you don't want to use. And you don't really have to manage like four different apps or that kind of thing. So that is one option. You can also just use the regular WhatsApp stuff and just keep it in like a virtual machine, just check it less. But still have it open, and that way you can always kind of be like, well, I'm still technically in the group and I can check on it weekly, but I'm not in it every day. So just different things for you to think about. And I'd love to hear your reflections and what you decide. I know you're in the Signal group, so you can just ping the Signal group and let me know. Oh, I didn't mean to keep it on the there. Okay. Oh yeah. Did you guys notice this on our website? Check out the eyes. Michael did this. He's like an awesome dev who worked really hard on our website. And he did an awesome job. But look at the eyes. Oh my God, the eyes move when you hover over it. It's so cool. I'm gonna go ahead and do last calls. It looks like it's slowing up a little bit. So if you're in the Signal group, I'll give everyone a few more minutes. If you're in the live chat, and any last questions, any last comments, if you guys did anything cool in your privacy, security, tech journey, whatever, definitely share. And then we'll go ahead and start finishing this out. Another water break. Also, happy Halloween. I totally forgot about that. If any of you have Halloween plans, I would love to see those actually. So please share, like, if you're doing anything fun on Halloween. Hi all, says HGNN. Few questions. No questions. Okay, Signal group. Yeah. Tori's saying, oh, you know what? We did have that conversation. I'm just delusional. You're right. Because Tori said that we had a whole conversation in Cyprus that, like, Tori said she had a Libra too. And I was like, I didn't know you had a Libra too. And then I just saw Tori said she had a Libra too. And I said, I didn't know she had a Libra too right here on the live stream. So I think it's a combination of jet lag. And also, like, when I'm in a live stream, I don't, like, fully think and, like, remember things because I have, like, one, two, three, four windows, five, and then yeah, I have five windows in front of me, so I have to like manage all these windows and keep up with the live chat and the Signal group and make sure like the live stream is still working properly. So there's just a lot going on. But yeah, that's pretty funny. And dude, I'm still jet lagged. Like I woke up, so not like last night, but the night before, I woke up at 12:50. I woke up at 12:50 in the morning. I went to bed at like 10. And I woke up at 12:50 in the morning. And I woke up and I'm like, man, oh, I feel so good and refreshed. I slept so well. Let me check the time. I bet it's like 6 a.m. 12:50. I was so pissed. And then I just couldn't go back to bed and I just had to stay up the rest of the night. And then this morning was a little bit better. I woke up at 2:30. And same thing though. I woke up at 2:30 and I went, man, I'm just so refreshed, and I went to bed at 9:30 last night, so I got about a 6 hour sleep cycle in, right? 6 hours of sleep and still woke up at 2:30. Crazy. And I just went, wow, I feel so good. I bet it's at least like 4 a.m. Nope, 2:30. So anyway, that's my life recently. So, but then I still like randomly fall asleep. It's been rough with the time change. Also, okay, sorry, Nanito boy. For Black Friday, what are you gonna buy? So I actually did something new here, and I recommend everybody does this because even when we make our Black Friday video, I'm going to make a point, and I always make a point to say, hey, the point of Black Friday isn't to like mindlessly consume. The point of Black Friday is to like ideally have something you are already going to buy that you now have a discount for. So I would recommend you all do this as well. Yes, we're going to make a Black Friday video, but it's supposed to be like something that you already wanted to buy. So where I'm going with this is I made a note, and my note is Black Friday list. And I pretty much put together the things that I want and that I might buy if they go on sale on Black Friday. I don't know if they're going to go on sale. So one of the things I want to get is a compressed air machine. Compressed air? People talk about inflation with food. Holy crap. I remember back in my day, I could buy some compressed air and it was like $3 a pop. And now it's like $12 for some freaking air, Unbelievable. So I'm done paying $12 a can for compressed air. So I want to get one of those really nice compressed air machines that costs like $130, which apparently will pay for itself in like 3 weeks nowadays. So, but it's still $130. It's not something I need right away. I can live without compressed air for a while. And so I was gonna like put it on my Black Friday list. So that's kind of what I recommend you all doing. Make a list of things that you're like interested in buying, but you don't really need right away. And then on Black Friday, if anything's on sale, that's your opportunity to hop on it. But don't just go on Black Friday and mindlessly look at sales and see if like, oh, I could use this now. Because now you're probably just buying something you didn't even need in the first place, right? So some things on my list. I've been looking at potentially getting a Pro iPhone, mainly because I have migrated over to using an iPhone for recording our videos, which is crazy. But I've realized that people don't care as much about the quality of our videos as I thought they did, and so using like a nice camera is fun and all. But if you go and watch our Purism, like the Purism Refunded Me video, that was shot on an iPhone, and that's on like a 13 mini, so it's not even that nice of a camera. So we've been talking about it, and we decided that like it's actually much cheaper, and it's still really good quality and very convenient to just move over to like a Pro iPhone for recording. And so I'm taking a look at, oh, sorry, I hit my space bar. I'm taking a look at doing like a 15 or 16 Pro potentially, like an older model, and seeing if any of those go on like a nice sale for Black Friday. I also have an Anker battery pack as well that I'm hoping goes on sale. I also have just refills for commonly used things. Like replacements for like my air filters at home, et cetera. And then I also, yeah, that's pretty much that. So that's the main things on my list that I feel comfortable sharing to the world. But yeah, do you guys have anything you're looking to save up for or like purchase? Let's see. Let me move back to the signal group here. Adblock, ad blocker versus the privacy block lists in Next DNS. Okay, so Gerald's question here, and these are the last few questions. So, Alex's comment. Hopefully, we find a house at discount. Man, don't we all? Don't we all? That would be pretty nice. Yeah, the first like realty company to offer like a house on a Black Friday discount. That would be pretty awesome. So Gerald said ad blocker versus the privacy block list in Next DNS. So essentially what this question is, and I've talked about this before, and we actually made a whole clip on this. You can probably look it up on YouTube and it'll come up. It's blocking ads via your browser versus blocking ads via DNS. Long story short, because I'm at the end of the stream here, they both block different things and they have different capabilities. The browser one is very limited to just your browser. So if you have anything in like a random software that you have installed on your computer, it's not going to cover that. Versus lots of the DNS stuff is actually system-wide, and you can configure them system-wide very easily. On the other hand, the DNS stuff is a lot less granular, right? Because when you're doing YouTube, you can't block YouTube ads from just DNS blocking because YouTube combines the domain name with other important critical things for YouTube. But a ad blocker is much more granular in your browser and can do that kind of blocking. So I actually think using both is the best case scenario. Ideally, you use some kind of ad blocker in your browser and you use some kind of DNS filtering system-wide, and that way you get the best of all worlds. So that's what I recommend doing. They both have different benefits, and yeah, I think that's the TLDR of how I feel about it. Ooh, HGNN started using Fudo keyboard again. It's a struggle, but the clipboard, what do you use? I just use the default keyboard. I've never been a huge like custom keyboard person. I just use the default keyboard on anything I use. And actually, I really like the Google keyboard. I think the Google keyboard is really nice on Android, and you can disable the internet permission for it if you're on an operating system that allows that. And so that solves pretty much the privacy issue with the Google keyboard. But of course, there's Fudo keyboard that people really love, and there's lots of open source keyboards as well in F-Droid. So, Happy Halloween says, yeah, of course. Thoughts on WaterFox and their DNS Fastly in general about the recommended DNS, NextDNS, and Firefox without any customization? I think, okay, so thoughts on WaterFox. It seems fine. I don't have any beef with WaterFox. I do think that just regular Firefox is good, and you can just turn off telemetry in Firefox and install uBlock Origin and be pretty good. And nowadays we have Mullvad browser and Tor browser as well if you want something a bit more hardcore. I think WaterFox is positioning itself a bit between those options. It's like trying to be better than Firefox out of the box, but not as extreme and hardcore as Mullvad and Tor browser. So yeah, try it out. If you like it, then great. I don't have any issues with them. I don't know much about Fastly, so no comments there. And then recommended DNS in Firefox. So yeah, you can use NextDNS. Though personally for me, I would recommend setting up NextDNS system-wide and then just having Firefox use your system-wide DNS. And that way you get NextDNS not just in Firefox, but across your whole system. Gaskey wants to buy a wired mouse. Very nice, very nice. And they're going all in on wired peripherals. Dude, that is so the way. I am a very big anti-wireless person. I know I'm saying this with a wireless mic on my shirt right now. But there are very few things I use that like the wireless stuff actually works well. And this is one of the exceptions. But I think Bluetooth headphones are my least favorite thing in the world. Like even AirPods. Because people say AirPods, it's so seamless between your devices. And it's like, it's not more seamless to me than a cable. Like a cable, it's plugged into this device, it works on that device. Plug it into another thing, it works on that device. There's no, oh my God, it's connected to this device. It's not connecting to my new device, and oh, I gotta transfer it over. And if you, I can't stand Bluetooth headphones, man. They just never work the way I want them to. What's a Keytron? Is that like an obvious thing that I should know what that is? Keytron. Let me see. I'm pulling that up. This might be something that I should know. High quality keyboards and mice. Oh, that makes sense. Keytron. Ah. Oh, they look very nice. I'm looking at the wireless. Oh, wow, yeah. I really like the designs of some of these. They look nice. Wow. I hope they have a Black Friday discount then for you. The Wolfbox MF100. Let me check this out. Wolfbox MF100. See. Oh, cool. Oh, they have an anniversary sale going on. Okay, I'll bookmark this. Thank you for sharing. And I'm going to add this to my list. So I'll also look into them. The one I got was like one of the really popular, or not got, but the one I put down as potentially getting. Okay, cool. Thank you for the rec. I'll look into it and investigate. Considering getting some YubiKeys this year, I've been holding off because I want to get at least four of them, which isn't cheap. Yeah, they have some sets, but yeah, four isn't going to be super cheap. But that's a good thing to invest in maybe on Black Friday. Yes, the Bluetooth is kind of dodgy. So one way I've kind of worked around this, which actually makes Bluetooth far more bearable, if it's new. I think my backpack is around here. So this is actually, so I bought this for many reasons. One, yes, quality, because I use the Sennheiser Momentum 4s for Bluetooth headphones. But video editing, if you use DaVinci Resolve or you edit videos and you use just generic Bluetooth headphones, there can be a lot of latency, which means that when you're editing, you'll try to make a cut and you're talking within like a few frames, but the sound isn't actually reflecting the timeline. And so what happens is like you try to cut where your voice is and where you think you're cutting, but it's actually like 3 or 4 frames off because there's a latency between the editor and the headphones. And it's actually really bad with the Momentum 4s and at least on Mac OS with DaVinci Resolve. So Sennheiser literally sells a whole freaking product just to fix this problem. and it's this little dongle here. It's the, I don't, it's something, I forgot what it's called, but it's a USB-C, and it's a also USB-B, but it comes with an adapter, and you plug it in, and essentially this now functions as, you know, if you use wireless mice, same thing, right? Like, it's a dongle. And what you get from this is you get full quality, so you get to use the best codecs, and it's instant. Like, there's almost zero latency. It feels like you're using something wired, and it feels like it's just a bit more reliable. Like, it's not like switching between multiple devices. Like, I feel like when it connects to this, it is connected to this. So that is a good workaround as well if you don't want to use Bluetooth, because while I don't know if this uses Bluetooth, this probably does use Bluetooth, but it's like Bluetooth only between these two devices and inside your computer. It just shows up as like a sound output. Like, this shows up like you're plugging in a 3.5 millimeter jack, essentially. So that has been my workaround. Let's see. And now I'm gonna officially start. This is it. I'm gonna go finish this out here, but we're gonna go ahead and start logging off. So I'm using WireGuard with Warp. I don't see many people speaking about this VPN alternative. Do you have an opinion about it? I don't have a firm opinion that I want to share, but it's something I need to look into more because I've been getting this question quite a bit more. So I want to do more research. Yeah, you can't paste links. I think I turned that off to prevent spam. We've had issues. Cool. No, thanks. I'm going to go ahead and have that down as well. 30 gear. Adjustable cordless. Cool. Apps like Signal Chat can be easily compromised with video tapping any conversation as it's happening. Yeah, that's not a thing that can easily happen. So better provide a source, bro. Let's see, Smash Potatoes. Apple's reportedly changed up its design of its CPU chip, M5 Pro and Max chips. Have you heard anything? I haven't, actually. So that sounds like something else I should probably look into. I don't even think there's an M5 Pro yet. I think they just released the M5, unless I'm mistaken. Let me see. Yeah, it's just an M5 so far. There's no M5 Pro. So you're probably thinking of the M5 that's in the MacBook Pro, which I agree is very confusing. But yeah, I'm going to look into that. Yeah, cool. Thanks for the recs, guys. I'm going to look into it. And then let me check the Signal group. Yeah. Cool, nothing in the Signal group. That is all I have. So I want to do all my thank yous and start logging off here. So I want to start by thanking all of you in the live chat. You guys are a lot of fun. Thank you for your recs. Thank you, Johnny, of course, for supporting us and leaving a massive tip. Huge help, and so thank you so much. And I also want to thank our new member, Alcove Electronics Workshop. Thank you for becoming a Techlorian. You can do that on YouTube. You can also do it on our forum. If you go to our forum and you just go anywhere, you can actually click sign up. Well, apparently I can't find it. But the URL, it should be at the top. There's a little bar, and you just go to S. And it's to like support us. You can become a Techlorian on our forum as well. This goes directly via us and Stripe, so there's really no third parties, which is awesome. And then, if you don't like that, we're also on Patreon, so you can find all the ways to support us if you go to the support us on our homepage. And we also just support Monero and all those good things. So I want to thank all of our Techlorians, and especially all our new Techlorians. I want to thank you all for being active, and I want to thank everybody, of course, who is part of the weekly wins. So everyone who left a win this week, thank you so much. I wouldn't be able to do this stream without like any wins to share. And so you guys make this possible. And I also want to like call on you all to share some of your stories. You guys have interesting things in the live chat. And so if you want to expand more, we already have next week's thread already open. So just go ahead. It's in the description. It's free to join our forum. Like no strings attached. Just join the forum. Anyone can join. And then you just go ahead and leave your wins. And then I'll go ahead and include it next week. And yeah, thank you all in the Signal group as well. And I think those are all my thank yous. If I missed you, it wasn't on purpose. I'm just very tired and still dealing with jet lag. So thank you for your patience. But yeah, that's all I have. I want to thank all of you for being here, and I will see you next week for the weekly Privacy Wins. And I have just a lot of gratitude for all of you and for the opportunity to be here and be able to talk about something I care so much about and be able to share it with all of you and for you all to share your wins. It's just a lot of good vibes all around. So thank you all, and we will see you next time on Tech Lore. Peace.